Welcome to Why Don't We Dress for Dinner Anymore with our co-host, Teddy Crockman, the queen of style, fashion, everything Chicago.
And Melissa Pierce, documentarian and natural redhead. Today, we'd like to welcome Maggie Gillette to our podcast. Maggie has worked in nearly every facet of the fashion industry, from PR to designing lingerie, to designing a lingerie line, to high-end retail, or working backstage and styling photo shoots. Maggie has seen it all. Now as a freelance writer, Maggie covers fashion, beauty, lifestyle verticals. Her work has been published internationally on the web and print outlets. She loves sharing her insider knowledge with readers and keeping up with the latest styles while using her trend forecasting skills to predict what's next. Maggie regularly provides expert commentary on fashion, beauty, and lifestyle trends and has been quoted in InStyle, People, Martha Stewart Weddings, Birdie, Forbes, and on TV. After a successful career in New York, Maggie returned to Chicago to be closer to her family. However, a desire to stay engaged with a creative community and to support other designers led her to becoming a principal at The Curio, a fashion organization providing fashion mixers, fashion shows, and seminars to the Chicago fashion creative community. Welcome to our podcast, Maggie. We're really glad to have you today.
Thank you so much for having me.
You know, Maggie, I never realized that you had such a full fashion background, from lingerie to PR to your writing career. I mean, it seems like you've really covered almost every aspect of fashion you can think of. When did you recognize that you had this passion for fashion, and what motivated you to start a career path in fashion?
I always loved fashion. I mean, my mom says, you know, when I was a little girl, she lost me in a department store and found me just hugging a rack of dresses because I loved them so much. And as like a two-year-old, I would give tours of my closet. So, you know, it just was something I always loved. I always wanted to be involved in one way or another in the industry. Didn't start out in the industry, but found my way there eventually. And then, yes, I was willing to do pretty much anything because I love it so much. So I love doing fashion PR. I love writing about fashion, talking about fashion, creating fashion, connecting people in the fashion community. Basically, it's fashion. I love it.
Yeah. So it sounds like it was kind of innate. Like you just kind of were born loving fashion, kind of drawn to that. A little similar in that way too. I remember back in the 50s when we still had big catalogs, I remember the big Sears catalog would come to our house every fall. And the first thing I would do would be looking at the ladies' fashion, and I'd tear out pages of dresses that I thought my mom should wear. So I was already trying to be like a stylist for my mother. So I can totally relate to that. So can you tell us, because I'm really interested, how did you get involved? How did you make your foray into designing lingerie? How did that happen?
I kind of fell into it. There was someone who was looking for an illustrator to do some illustrations, and I did some illustrations for him. That company didn't end up working out. And I was like, you know, I really enjoy this. Maybe I'll try and make my own lingerie company. And so I did. I tried to get it off the ground in Chicago. I was able to find a great pattern maker in Chicago. So that was wonderful. Sochil Herrera. She's still in the Chicago scene, and she's an amazing pattern maker. So she made me incredible patterns. I was unfortunately not able to find a factory in Chicago that at the time that could create them, which is what had me moving to New York and ultimately finding a fashion, several different factories in Brooklyn that did incredible work. And I was able to produce here in the US and make ethical lingerie.
Could you tell us a little bit about I believe the brand was called The Giving Bride?
Yeah. So it was bridal lingerie during that period of my life.
Lingerie.
I found a lot of my friends were getting married and there was kind of a gap between like the super high-end La Perlas of the world and like something that just had sort of like rhinestones or a bow stuck on it.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to create something that reflected sort of what I was seeing my friends would enjoy, something that was sophisticated, high-end, ethically produced, and maybe wasn't just white. So, I mean, you could buy stuff in black, which is sort of atypical for bridal lingerie, especially at the time. We did a ton in pink because, you know, people might have been more comfortable with that, especially like we had a lot of second time brides. We found out as I was working with boutiques, they would tell me that, you know, someone who's coming in their 60s was buying it for their second wedding, or someone was coming in, you know, in their 40s and they finally felt like, oh, this reflects who I am. It's not like a stereotypical bridal look. So yeah, I was seeing my friends and seeing them not be reflected in the bridal lingerie industry as they were going through their weddings. I've been a bridesmaid like 9 times. Ooh. So I had a lot of personal experience with bachelorette parties and all of that. So I just wanted to make something that reflected a modern bride.
Wow. Well, in that same vein, there was something else very interesting that I read that you said you identified a gap in the market and you co-founded something called the Lingerie Selection, which you describe as a luxury untrade show that embraced the idea that intimate apparel should be shown in an intimate setting. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, absolutely. So I did the sort of big lingerie trade show. And as a new designer, you know, a lot of the big brands didn't necessarily, but like department stores and things didn't necessarily want to talk to you, which made it really tough because you were there and you were trying to engage people and not everyone was open or willing. And that didn't feel great. And it also felt like such a missed opportunity because, you know, the big stores were going to their providers that they were already working with and often skipping and not seeing small brands.
Yeah.
And so a couple of my friends and I were saying, you know, if we could get in front of some of these brands and really show our products in their best light, that would be a way for them to really engage with us and talk to us. So instead of being at a trade show under like the glaring lights of the Javits Center, which after like 3 days, you feel like you can't even see anymore. You wanted to do something that was in like a small environment. We would have cocktails and have it be really casual. We would work with some lingerie influencers. There's a huge lingerie influencer community and a huge lingerie enthusiast community. And so we would work with a lot of people in that industry to have it be like a friendly thing. Instead of just passing out line sheets, you could sit down, have a cocktail, mingle with everyone.
But wait, where were you having these?
We had them in a couple of small like photo studios. Okay. We had one in my office that was like really intimate. I was very fortunate to share my office with an artist. And so we had like incredible art on the walls and we just sort of held them more like, you know, feeling like it was a cocktail party environment where you were browsing and the high-end lingerie. Right.
Intimate setting, like a hotel room, that's a little too intimate. But then you're like,
oh, you know what, though? A lot of people do that. That's pretty common, too, actually. Yeah. So, but yeah, we did like a cool daylight photo studio that worked really well with us. They were wonderful. And we could, you know, we could do silly things like they had props. So we had like a bathtub that I filled with balloons and we were letting people get into it and take like selfies.
Oh, that's cute.
Just to have fun with it instead of having to be like this trade show. You know, we actually had a boutique owner come by one day and she wasn't on the schedule. She had told me she was going to come the next day. And she was just like, oh, I just like hanging out with you guys. So I'll come back tomorrow for actual appointments, but I just figured I'd come by, have a cake pop, have a glass of champagne. I was like, you are more than welcome.
Wow.
That's pretty.
Yeah, it gave us a different way. And then we knew that the brands who were coming actually were interested in small brands. So we might not have had 200 retailers come through, but we had 50 who were specifically looking for brands like us that were all from independent designers. We had a lot of European designers who would come over and join us. It was great.
How long did you have this company for? How long were you in the line?
We were there. Well, I started my line in 2013 in Chicago, but really took off when I moved to New York. And we had our lingerie trade show. It shut down right before 2020. Oh, which was actually, I thought we were just taking a break because I was pregnant, but our show would have been at the end of February 2020. So that was actually very fortunate that we hit the pause button because I don't think anyone's been there.
And so when did you move back to Chicago then?
I moved back in the spring of 2022.
Oh, so it's just been a couple of years now.
Yeah.
Wow. So, well, and you're very involved still in the fashion community. I know you do a lot of writing for House and Gardens currently. How did you go from, okay, you had this fabulous lingerie line. Before that, I guess you had done some PR and you had done some styling and all that kind of stuff. So you were like in behind the scenes kind of person. Then you had your own line. Then she had a baby. Right. Very involved in fashion, all that kind of stuff. So how did that go from all that to like being a freelance writer? How did that freelance writing all of a sudden come into the picture?
So sort of like you were saying, you know, you used to tear out magazines or catalogs. I mean, I remember looking at Bazaar when I was like 8.
Yeah.
And it's funny because like my mom was not into that kind of fashion. I remember finding my mom's friends had these amazing, you know, Vogue and Harper's Bazaar. I remember being on a vacation with some family friends and flipping through it and being like, yes, this is what I love. So I was always obsessed with magazines. I always loved it. And when I first moved to New York, I actually interned for a PR company there too, doing backstage at New York Fashion Week. And I loved it. And I was like, okay, I don't have the time to be the world's oldest intern forever. And so I was like, what can I do that I can go to Fashion Week still? So I started freelance writing for a publication in the UK who was looking for a New York-based writer to cover the New York shows. And that was wonderful. I did like 6 seasons with them. And so I got to go cover New York Fashion Week. And, you know, what could be better than seeing fashion shows and getting to tell people about them and talk about them? So as I was pivoting after having a baby, I was like, you know, this is something I could do more easily from home, to write for things like Better Homes and Gardens, where I currently write, and other outlets that, you know, I can do this from home a little bit more on my own schedule. So it definitely made sense lifestyle wise.
Oh yeah. Especially with a little kid. Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's great. Well, so you're back in Chicago for a couple of years. You're writing for House and Gardens and some other magazines. What brought you to the Curio? I know that you are one of the founders. Are you a founder of Curio? Do I have that
right? I'm a principal, but not a founder. I found out about the Curio through my old pattern maker. Social and I had stayed in touch. Mm-hmm. She and I met up once in New York, and we just always kind of kept a little bit in touch. And I saw that she had gone to a Curio event. So I was like, what is this? Because one of my big concerns actually about coming back to Chicago was that I might not find the kind of fashion community that I had with running a trade show with these other women who were, you know, fantastic designers as well. So that was one of my big concerns in coming back. And I saw that she'd been to this event at the Curio. And I thought to myself, I would love to know more about this. So I just started looking into them. I reached out to Ian. We had a conversation. We'd had a very similar career path in some ways, and then very different in others. But we also had the same path of we had children during the pandemic. We'd both moved to Chicago from New York. So there were a lot of similarities in our lifestyles where we started to talk and we felt that there were some complementary skill sets between the two of us. Mm-hmm. So we started just working together. It just really happened organically. And I loved the mission of the Curio. I loved seeing how things had changed in Chicago in the last decade. I think now there is more production here than there was when I got started and I couldn't find some place to produce my lingerie. So it's wonderful to see the way that that's changed and to be a part of it continuing to evolve.
Yeah, there's a lot, so many young, really up and coming fashion creatives in Chicago. I just love to see it, you know, all this new talent, new designers, new stylists. It's just a fun community, so diverse. I just love going to the Curio events. Could you tell our audience who's not part of the fashion scene in Chicago, what is the Curio and kind of what is their function and focus? Could you tell us a little bit more about that? Because it really is a good organization.
We try to connect culturally curious consumers with Chicago designers. A lot of people are interested in the Chicago fashion community or have heard a little bit about what's going on in the fashion community, and they don't quite know how to get in and learn more. Yeah. And so we try to host events that help people see how fabulous our design community is, because, you know, someone may not know that there are actually fabulous designers in Chicago. You know, I have a Nishka coat, the infamous puffer that a bunch of us have. Mm-hmm. And every time I wear it out, I cannot go more than 2 feet without someone stopping me and saying, "Where did you get this coat? Where did you get this coat?" You know,
what coat is it again? Say that to me.
The Nishka puffer. We were joking, there's like six of us that have it, that we're like the puffer pots posse. But you know,
when we saw her at Rachel's event, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Yes. But yeah, so we just, you know, we love being able to show Chicago how many incredible designers there are here, highlight the designers we have. So we do socials, we do fashion shows, presentations, we do different kinds of educational panels, sip and shops, really just to expose people to the huge range of what Chicago fashion is, because it is everything from street style to evening wear, athletic wear. It's such a broad range here in Chicago. There's really something for everyone. And it's so wonderful to be able to introduce people to these designers, many of whom are really working hard to create ethical, sustainable collections. So, you know, it's truly the opposite of fast fashion. And it's so great to be able to promote designers who are doing things like that.
Yeah. Well, it's a wonderful platform that you give people to meet each other. Like Melissa said, she and I met at a Curio event. That's how we came up with our podcast. Yeah. So thanks to the Curio, that's how we got, Why Don't We Get Dressed for Dinner Anymore? So, you know, you bring a lot of people together who can consult and you know, do all kinds of projects together. So I think it's a really great venue, you know, for the Chicago area. I think we're very underappreciated for a large city. We have a good amount of fashion talent, but like you said, it's a little bit challenging to get recognized and noticed here. So the more that we can mingle and support each other, you know, create our own projects and things, I think will give more voice and more focus to the Chicago fashion community. How would you describe your own personal fashion aesthetic? What would you say your bent is towards? How would you say your closet, if you were to describe your closet, what is it?
If you're going to give us a tour of your closet, 2-year-old you, hugging all of your things, what is the first thing you're going to show us? Yes. What is the first thing you're going to show us in your closet that represents you?
Probably something with a cape or something with giant sleeves. You know, I sort of have a classic but edgy style. Tons of black, but I love like a cool silhouette. So anything that has like ridiculous sleeves, anything that has a cape on it, anything with like, you know, an asymmetrical hemline.
But you like a good shape.
I like a good shape. It's really, especially because I wear so much black, I like a good shape and I like a good shoe. I definitely have a shoe collection. That is what I'd like to call it instead of a problem.
You can never have too many shoes.
No, you can't. So I have all sorts of colored shoes as well. That's where the color comes in my wardrobe. So
you'll do like black with a pop of color.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah,
that's a great go-to.
Red, yeah, all the colors, yellow, green.
Yeah, yeah. So it sounds like you have the focal interest in your wardrobe is the shapes more than colors or patterns. You're not a color or pattern person. You're more into the, you know, asymmetrical or just anything different kind of a shape with a pop of color in your shoes.
With that in mind, What was your favorite era? What's your favorite shape, era of shape? I know. I was like,
what's your favorite era of shape?
Hey, listen.
Where did that question come from? Your favorite era of
I was thinking about silhouettes. I didn't want to say favorite silhouette. I mean, the era that like this... I was thinking
your favorite silhouette would have made a lot more sense than your favorite era of shape.
But your favorite silhouette would have been like, well, I like a bodycon. But no, I needed a time. I needed to add a time frame. It was very hard for me. Listen,
do you get the question that she asked you?
I do. Yes. No, I think it's difficult to answer simply because I like a lot of different things. So I do like, you know, I love a Dior new look, has like a very strong silhouette, obviously. But I also enjoy like a really...
Are you talking about the 1950s Dior new look? Okay.
Yeah. So like that obviously has a very strong silhouette.
Yes.
So that's really cool. But I love like a good, I love a good shift dress that's got like a pretty extreme A-line. Like something like that is always fun. You can't go wrong. I love a 90s sort of slip dress look too, with like some, you know, something that's just really streamlined. So, you know, I can go to sort of extremes.
Again, you know, back to the shape.
Yeah.
Again, it's for you, it's not a period of clothing. It's more the interest of the shape.
Yes.
Like, for example, the new look Dior was very, you know, cinched waist and then the full skirt. And then, of course, she had the great, you know, like kind of cool looking hat, whatever. Yeah. And the shift, which is just a classic look forever. You can wear that. And the same thing with the slip dress, too. You know, so you, like you said, you're more, it sounds like you're just more classic with an edge. That's kind of your thing.
Yeah. And, you know, and I'll layer things. So, I mean, that's always fun. You can always throw an interesting, like the big puffer over something to create a different shape.
Yeah. Do you have any fashion movies that you're influenced by? Any kind of, is there any particular movie or movies that you like to watch just to watch for the fashions? I have movies that I just like to watch, even though the story's kind of lame. I like to watch it because it's got good fashions.
There's one I've only seen once, but W and E, which was about Wallace and Edward. It's not a very good movie, as you said. But the clothes are incredible.
Oh, really?
So that's one.
It's called Wallace and Edward?
It's W and E. It's about Wallace and Edward. Wallace Simpson.
Was she wearing, like, they had her dressed, like, in fabulous designer things?
The plot was, like, there was someone in modern times, they're putting on an exhibit. So there's a lot of it's flashbacks, but some of it takes place in, like, the 2000s. So there's sort of a fashion, you know, exhibition or some sort of like sale going on at like a Sotheby's kind of style place. But the plot's not that great. Just read it and watch the clothes. That one, I mean, you know, everybody loves the Devil Wears Prada scene where she goes through the montage of all the clothes. That's always fun. Clueless, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Can't get away from that 90s fashion.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many fun ones like that. I love a good fashion movie. And then, of course, like documentaries. There's an incredible one from BBC4 that you can find on YouTube about couture. Highly recommend if you can find that on YouTube. Yeah. It's a really interesting, like, deep dive into who really wears these kind of clothes.
Yeah. It's amazing, you know, how classic some styles have remained. I was watching, there's this movie I have. And the plot is like totally 60s ridiculous, but it's with Anne Margaret and it's called Made in Paris. And she plays this department store buyer who goes to Paris and she's going to all the couturier houses to, you know, purchase clothes for this high end department store. And they have a fashion show, an actual fashion show in the movie. And I am telling you, there is not an outfit in that fashion show that wouldn't be relevant and you couldn't wear it today. I mean, it just amazes me every time I see it because, like I said, it's the silliest movie, but the fashions in it are so great. And it's an actual staged fashion show. And there's beautiful gowns and the silhouettes of the cocktail dresses and the coats and the capes. There isn't one thing. And I'm amazed because I look at it and the movie was made like in the, I think it was the late, like 66, 67, something like that, late 60s. And I'm thinking to myself, my gosh, that's over what, 50, 60 years ago, something like that. And you could still wear those clothes today.
All right. Well, we're all going out to cocktails tonight. What are we wearing?
Oh, that would be fun. I love vintage. I love vintage shopping. Maybe something with like a fun, you know, like a sort of structured dress with like a little capelet. It's not too cold here in New Orleans, so I could get away with being sleeveless. Nice. I probably also own more sleeveless or short-sleeved coats than anyone else in the world. My husband's like, do you have another coat that has no zipper or buttons in the front and no sleeves? And I was like, yes, I do.
I know who to go to borrow a good coat from if I'm looking for something to wrap.
Practical.
It's always a challenge with coats is not to wrinkle whatever you're wearing underneath, you know? And so you're in freezing cold Chicago. You've got this really cute outfit on, but it's so darn cold out. But if you put most coats on, it's going to squish the sleeves or it's going to fold up everything. So you got to just like drape it over your shoulders. So I'm always looking for a good cape or a good something loose, you know, that you could wear over an evening outfit and you're not going to end up looking all rumpled. So I know now who to go to. I just call Maggie and say, Maggie, you have any great cape that I could wear?
And Maggie,
my friend was teasing me because she was like, I had this dress on with like these huge puffed shoulders. And she was like, what do you wear over that? It's 20 degrees outside. And I was like, I wear my coat that also has the huge puffed shoulders and you pair them. And she was like, of course you do. Of course you do.
I love, wait, do you have like a whole room in your house in Chicago just for your cape coats?
I mean, in our house redo that we're doing right now, the closet was definitely like a focal point for me.
Oh, so did you make a room closet? Did you make
It's going to be like a walkthrough dressing room situation.
Love it. See, that would be my dream. But I just redid my house probably about 5-6 years ago. And at that time, I had other things going on in the house, but my dream was always, I have 4 bedrooms and there's only 2 of us living here. So I have plenty of extra bedrooms. So I always wanted to make one of the bedrooms into, like you said, like a wardrobe kind of closet. Instead, all it is nothing but like, you know, those racks that you could buy at Amazon.
Yeah.
It's just racks of clothes all over this one room, just racks and shoes all over. And I always think to myself, I really need to make this into a closet. But I'm thinking, you know, I don't even know if they would make a closet to fit all these clothes because I have just like racks of stuff. You know, like I always see these beautiful like room closets and they have these sections for blouses and the my clothes wouldn't fit in that. I don't know how I would even design that. I might have to have like a carousel.
Oh, whereas I have shoe racks going all the way down into my basement for my shoe collection, right? Nice 6-foot tall.
Yeah.
6-foot tall shoe shelves that are all my shoes. And I keep telling my family, oh, you guys, you need to get rid of some shoes because there's just too many shoes out front. Meanwhile, in the back of the house, my entire collection is hanging out.
But they're organized.
They're organized. That's right. And I don't need to get rid of any shoes.
Well, we want you once you finish that closet, I want you to take a picture of it and send it to me. I'm curious to see how it's going to turn. Are you going to have one of those things in the middle that's like drawers or whatever?
I don't think we're not going to do that, but we are going to have like some closed storage too, because my husband has pointed out I'm not necessarily the best at keeping everything like color coded organized. So, we're also going to have shelves with lighting for my shoes.
Oh, how good. Nice.
The lighting's important.
For your shoes. I have my shoes. I've thrown away most of my shoe boxes because I find out they just take up too much room. So I usually throw the shoe boxes away, but now I just have closets lined with shoes, another closet lined with boots, another closet lined with shoes. And now I have that rack room filled with shoes as well too. So I got to figure out a way to like,
we got to get you some lighting. We got to get
no,
you some
I need
lighting.
Some shoe racks. Or...
All right, Maggie, one last question. What are your thoughts on the prevalence of casual dressing today for almost every occasion? What do you think is going on?
I mean, I love to dress up. So, you know, I have not fallen into that not dressing up category. Mm-hmm. No, I was joking with one of my friends. I was calling it like lawyers in leggings because like everyone's at home and even people who are professionals are like just in athleisure 24/7. I actually had a friend who told me I'm not buying anything that isn't just like something I can wear to the playground. And I was like, Wow. I mean, I can see that there's sort of a practical bent to that in some ways with like a work from home culture. But at the same time, like, does that give you joy? Like, do you open up your closet and say, like, there's another pair of leggings? You know, it's me. I mean, I was wearing leggings this morning. I climbed like a play structure in a playground. Those are great for that. But, you know, if you're going out to dinner, if you're going out for drinks with your friends, it's nice to wear something that like makes you feel good. And I think dressing up makes you feel good generally. I think people have sort of forgotten that in some way. Because I know even when I'm not feeling well, I always feel a bit better if I put on a little makeup, put on a dress, you know, instead of just, well, let me just wear the most casual clothes. Well, let me just, you know, then you sort of have that mentality of like, I'm just going to lay here. So I think people sometimes forget. And I think the pandemic really affected that.
Yeah. I think it put it on steroids pretty much. Yeah.
Right.
There was like a lot of that already. But then when there was no place to go, you know, you sort of, I think people just have forgotten the joy in dressing up.
Yeah. And that's really something that's one of the things that we like to focus on in this podcast as much as we can. Because like you said, Maggie, I think people have just forgotten the fun that it is to plan an outfit, to get dressed up, to look forward to wearing the outfit. I know sometimes it's not even so much the event. It's just, I can't wait to put on the outfit.
I can't wait to get dressed
that
up.
That I'm wearing to the event. You know, it's just, it's so much fun. And I think, like you said, people have forgotten their joy in dressing up and they've just kind of fallen into this slump. And I'm just wondering, because, you know, you read so many different things. One article will say it's the death of luxury fashion. It's never going to return. Then there's another one that says, oh, we're going to be on the upswing. And now I think, I can't remember if it was you, Maggie, or somebody that wrote or was talked to in an article recently about styles and trends. And they were talking about how styles from the 50s are starting to come back.
That wasn't me, but that doesn't surprise me. You know, I think there are a lot of people who are looking for a bit more of a return to glamour and a bit more dressing up because, you know, we have been home for so long. It's nice to see. I mean, one of the nice things about the Curio is like getting out there and meeting people in person.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think sometimes people have even forgotten the joy in that. And, you know, yeah, it's easy to stay home. Right. Like it's easy to stay in our leggings. But, you know, a lot of times when we get out there and put ourselves out there, that's how you meet new people. That's how
Absolutely.
You have experiences. And I think people have unfortunately forgotten the joy in that. And, you know, some young people who were in college during COVID, I mean, I feel
they never really got that. For them.
They never got that. They really didn't have, you know, the experience of being on a campus and meeting new people. And I heard so many people who said, well, you know, I started my college experience online, so I just continued it that way.
Mm.
And it's not the same, you know, experience. So I think there's been so many changes culturally over the last few years.
Yeah.
But I would hope that, you know, some people are wanting to get back out there. You know, I was talking to a friend of mine. I was like, you know, I want to start having dinner parties again.
Yes.
Same.
Like, have people over, you know,
and the people get dressed up to come to your house, not just in blue jeans and a athletic shirt or something, you know.
And the trend forecaster in you, do you see this happening for a lot of people? Do you see us?
I mean, I think at some point we're social creatures. And at some point there's got to be sort of a return to getting out there, even if it's smaller scale dinner party kind of events. I think dinner parties are going to make a comeback.
I wish they would.
I mean, I remember my parents had people over all the time when I was growing up and I loved it. And I want my son to have that same experience. So hopefully maybe some of us who had that experience when we were younger are going to start to think, you know, even if it's casual, get people coming over, get people going out again, you know, have a party.
Yeah. And maybe you're right. Maybe it's the lack of socialization. You know, if you're not socializing, like you said, and you're just staying at home, you're not going to get dressed up, of course, to sit around the house. So you're going to put the leggings on or you're going to put the sweats on or whatever is your pajamas. It's comfy, cozy. it really, I think, is needing to revive more social interaction with people. And as we become more socially active again, that might activate us, that part of the brain, to say, you know, I'm tired of always looking like this. I want to look like that when I go out. You know, it might take a few years, but I'm hopeful that some of that glamour, some of that just dressing up, pure joy of dressing, will come back to us, because it's just depressing to me to think that we're just going to continue on with this, you know, just throw anything on your back and go out kind of mentality.
Well, it's not going to happen now that Maggie's at the helm of Curio with Ian. I mean, you're going to make sure that at least Chicago looks good.
I mean, you know what? Dressing up says so much about who you are. It's a great conversation starter. Like, you know, there's nothing better if you were going to an event where you don't know anyone than wearing something that makes people say, I mean, I was talking about the Nishka Kona earlier. I wore it to a women's networking event and I met so many people.
Yes.
Right. I guarantee
what you were wearing. Yeah.
It was a conversation starter. I guarantee if I'd been wearing a plain black sweater, you know, I thought I was going to pop in and out to this event. If I'd been wearing a plain black sweater, I probably would have, because I probably, no, people would not have been stopping
me. Would have noticed what you were wearing.
That black t-shirt. You know, so it wouldn't have been a place to engage. And I think fashion can be a way to show who you are. And when you shop ethically, it can also show your values. And then it's a way to, you know, engage with others. So I think it's one of the art forms we all engage with every single day.
Absolutely. So. And we agree with you on two, especially two of those levels. Both Melissa and I feel that fashion is an art form, both the way you dress, all the way from the designer to the stylist to the person who buys the outfit and puts it together in their own way. How you dress really communicates to many people. It's the first signal of who you are when you walk into a room. So dressing is really a lot more important than the value people place on it right now. And we're hoping that will turn around, thanks to you and the Curio and Chicago Fashion Coalition and FGI. We have many great organizations in Chicago that do help to bring fashion creatives together. And hopefully we'll get everybody ginned up again and ready to get dressed up and compete who's got the best look and who's got the most different and creative look, because it's fun. It really is. It's fun.
Absolutely.
And it's a way to bring people together as well, too.
Well, thank you so much, Maggie.
Thank you for having me.
I got one last question for you.
What?
Why don't we dress for dinner anymore, Teddy?
I don't know, Melissa. Why don't we dress for dinner anymore?
It's me.